by Shachi, the wife of Indra. What am I supposed to do? This Nahusha is making advancements. He wants me to become his wife. What should I do with him? How do I control him? Vrihaspati said, okay, you just tell him that you'll accept him. He can come visit you and you'll become his wife. Just tell him that and we'll arrange everything. So she agreed to, on Vrihaspati's advice, she pretended to agree to Nahusha's proposal. So you come to my palace, you know, tonight, and I'll accept you as my king, as my husband. So, feeling very arrogant, Nahusha ordered the seven sages, Sapta Rishis, to carry his palanquin and carry him to the palace of Shachi. Yeah. And anyway, they agreed. They weren't, you know, one of them was short. Who was it? Not Augustine. It was pretty tall. One of the sages was shorter than the other seven, so they couldn't carry the palanquin very evenly, and he was getting upset, and it wasn't going very fast. So he was urging them on, you know, walk faster, Sarpa, Sarpa, faster, walk faster. Sarpa also means snake. So I think it was Agastya Rishi, you know, he finally decided this is too much. And he said, okay, you become a Sarpa. Cursed him, and immediately Nahusha fell down and became a snake on the earth. And that was the end of Nahusha's rule as king of heaven. Because of avinayat, because of lack of humility toward the Brahmins and the sages, he was ruined. Okay. I think we're ready for start a discussion on the situation of ISKCON. Yes. Sri Kaliya, you know, Brahaspati knew what was going to happen before it happened. He didn't have to do anything to make an arrangement. He knew that this was going to happen, that Nahusha was going too far. The sages weren't going to tolerate much more from him. So he just knew in advance. Sages have that power. Just like King Pariksit was cursed to die in 7 days, he didn't make a public announcement. He simply threw off his royal garments and went to the bank of the Ganga and sat down. Still, we hear about 26 sages mentioned by name who all arrived immediately on the spot. Actually, it's said elsewhere that millions of sages came. An audience of millions were present to hear the Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadev. But there wasn't any announcement in the radio or the newspapers. You know, they all knew. The sages just knew what was happening by their mystic power. So they have that power to see the present, past, and future. They have what's called yogi pratyaksha, the sensory perception of mystics, which is way beyond ordinary human perception. Okay. Any other questions on this? On these verses? Can I ask? Here we have basic explanation of how when you have properly functioning Brahmins and Kshatriyas working together, each performing separate functions, human society can function efficiently, peacefully, progressively toward spiritual perfection. This is the ancient Vedic system. It's not intact in the modern world. It's become, in places where there's a shadow of it, that shadow is perverted. In India, it's become perverted into a, you know, corrupt caste system. And other parts of the world, although it's natural to always have intellectuals, administrators and fighters, you know, productive men and laborers, that you'll have even in a so-called classless society. In the Soviet Union, there were the academics, there were the apparatchiks, the bureaucrats, and there were the army is always there, and the proletariat. The separate classes are always there, even when you try to abolish them. They cannot be gotten rid of. But it's actually meant to be, the system has to be organized scientifically according to the principles of the Vedas. So the question is, we're, you know, ISKCON is a spiritual organization. Our strength is the holy name and the service of the Vaishnavas. We get our knowledge directly from the Bhagavatam, which doesn't emphasize the Varnashram system. Is it practical? Is it necessary? Is it practical to try to reinstitute this ancient system? A lot of devotees are not attracted to it. They like to continue living their modern life, and they consider this foreign and ancient, and it has nothing to do with their lives. So, you know, first of all, I mean, should this be done? Can it be done? Anybody want to say something? And then how? But that's the second question. Well, let's just, you know, play it by ear.
There's something, at least in the there's something going on there that didn't work out so well as far as this goes.
Yes.
So, is it possible to say this is a very clear element of what should happen?
Yes.
Is there some kind of understanding on what is going on?
I don't think it's been studied clearly and systematically. It should be. What's your idea of what's happened? I haven't been in North America for 6 years.
Or any other, is this one in the past? Doesn't have that specific.
Okay, can I share with you? Some historical background?
Yeah, to take this training and to have confidence and faith that he can be trained with that.
I'll just say one thing. So you're making basic points. What's lacking, what's needed is training and actual ongoing support.
Yeah. You mentioned that the Bhagavatam system is in so much emphasized by Ashram. The philosophy you mentioned before.
It's not the real focus of the Bhagavatam. There's not much in it yet. But, yeah. Just like I tried to think today of I'm sorry to interrupt you. I tried to think today of examples of kings interacting with Brahmins and becoming strong because I couldn't think of many examples in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam doesn't get into those issues.
Well, I just think that we have many ways sometimes to say that we're about Bhagavatam.
Yes.
We're Vaishnava, we're about Bhagavatam. But you can see actually, myself, I'm part of being Vaishnava, but when you look at the employees of Vaishnava, it's a very lovely position. And we really wish to see myself as aspiring to be a Vaishnava. The problem you can see in the movies is that because the Vaishnava characteristics are not really being displayed for the acting of the real Vaishnavas. We're not really on a level, just like in this case, the Western mentioned how the words was very easily exterior words of the Brahman. He felt very fortunate that he was hearing the book of Brahman. So I feel that maybe, like I mentioned myself much in this book, I didn't really join it because I wanted Krishna. I joined this one because I saw an organization that I liked to look at, and I thought that maybe I could find a nice position in this organization. But I didn't join it because I wanted Krishna. And unless our desire is really to have a Krishna, the world doesn't agree on Krishna. They're almost like pure Krishna. They're just, everything is finished. All of them is Krishna. So if we don't actually want Krishna, then we need to go through a process whereby we come to a certain view of Krishna. From what I understood was that was Prabhupada, that's why he said he emphasized our ashram, because he began to see that we're not just spontaneously attracted to Krishna, that we need to go through the purification process. And so therefore, what we see is so many works that he wrote about, which is part of those works which are about our ashram,
yes.
And how should we use the gym to discover.
Yes.
And one thing I wanted to kind of inquire you and also suggestion possibly is that I always understood that Brahman, in order for Brahman to be effective, has to be independent.
Independent
in the sense that he can't be controlled.
Yes.
I remember back in the 70s, the Jnana Buddha spoke out against the system of 11 gurus, etc. I don't remember exactly, but I remember he wrote a letter to the GC, and he was basically kind of ostracized in a way. And then a couple of years ago, the GC recognized that actually the Jnana Buddha was spoken.
Yes.
And they apologized to him for having, ostracized him and sent him back. Now, if he had been in a situation where he was independent, he couldn't have been an ostracized sent back, then maybe more value would have come, still in the early days.
Well, for Brahman to be independent, he has to be supported freely by charity. He can't be a paid servant of the institution. So then that means the Varnashram system has to be set up economically so that Brahmins are maintained. They don't have to beg, they don't have to become anybody's employee, everyone takes care of them freely, and they have no strings attached.
In the modern age, sometimes people are very stingy about giving charity. But I guess also Brahman is, especially a spiritual master, much better than Krishna. And in some places, degrees of 500 to 5,000 is the man's request in that sense, isn't it? So
yes.
If he doesn't get an interview, fine. And if he gets a pass, fine. So that's a very kind of
Right, but if the society wants to have any live Brahmins, they'll have to feed them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that culture needs to be encouraged.
Yeah, otherwise the Brahmins will all go into management. If you don't take care of them, then they're going to look for an emergency situation. Where they're not, nobody's allowed to. This is an emergency situation we're in. ISKCON nowadays, nobody is allowed to simply function as a Brahmin. If you're smart, if you're competent, you'll be pushed into management. That's, it shouldn't be like that.
It seems to be most involuntarily.
Yes.
Someone wants to be listening to somebody who's just speaking the truth.
Yes. That's natural. I mean, it's not that, you know, we should outlaw the mode of passion. It has its place. You know, the king, the rulers are also needed. And it's natural for people to admire the rulers and follow them. That's just human psychology. But the rulers have to support a class of men who can speak freely.
Yeah.
The problem is the rulers have to support the Brahmins, but first the Brahmins have to create the Kshatriyas. So, yeah, this is the problem. You know, Brahmins have to be created out of nowhere in a vacuum.
Yes. To this question also, that's in our, I guess our political culture discipline has been not focused on this point. The rich see that necessity. Although all the GCs on that have and amongst the conversations, it's like, yeah,
I'm not, you know, daydreaming, but I'm not doing anything.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I think I by myself, I can't do anything. Well, it takes, normally it requires support, encouragement and support for anybody to go out on a limb like that. Anybody else have something to say on these matters? Yes.
Well, from my perspective, this campus of the tradition of the system is that it all depends on qualifications.
Yes.
Some types of Brahmins, they have qualifications.
Yes.
Yes. And then also, in the South Africa, Brahmins find that, I said it before, that Brahmins claims that as far as Brahmins can only take place amongst
yeah, if we just continue the way we are, eventually, you know, we'll get everything together. But in the meanwhile, if we just continue the way we're going, we'll lose a lot of devotees and we'll fail to engage many others who could be engaged, you know, who can't directly participate in ISKCON because they can't surrender to it. So I think something has to be done. I mean, we could go on the way we're going, and somehow we'd muddle our way through eventually. But at a great human cost, and we lose a lot of individuals that we have and fail to get others that we could get. So I think that's why Prabhupada is pushing for this. That it's something practically needed to train, you know, to make Prabhupada said, you know, first thing is institute a Varnashram college in every temple. Basic idea there is training, education is what's required. Well, everyone's mentioning it. You know, that what's required is training. Brahmins and Kshatriyas can't just function by instinct. They have to be trained. Yes, yes.
So,
Well, that's certainly the initial purpose of ISKCON, you know, to train up a class of Brahmins. But Prabhupada was also talking later on about other kinds of training also. Training those who also bringing in, engaging people who can't be pure Brahmins also. Not everybody's a teacher. Not everybody can be a teacher. Some are going to be servants and some are going to be managers. And to be a teacher is a different function. So why take someone who has the nature of a fighter or an administrator or a worker and tell him he's got to be a teacher? That's not his nature. So yes, we're a rabbinical movement, but not every individual in this life is going to come up to the standard of functioning as a pure Brahmin. And many fall down because they can't artificially maintain that standard.
Yes,
yes. Yes. Especially if it's done in the organized way, under the direction of the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, then it's all very effective preaching. All the classes are needed. The Vaishyas and the Shudras are also very much needed. They're honorable, you know, worshipable. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas are needed first, and they require much more intense training. It's harder to make Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Vaishyas and Shudras, you can take people with those natures and very quickly engage them properly. But to find Brahmins and Kshatriyas and train them up properly, that takes a lot of thinking and a lot of work.
It seems like one of the key things is the economic situation.
Yes.
Because the problems are sort of free. So, what is the most economic situation as an understanding is just kind of out there.
Well, but, you know, the priorities hasn't been established, you know, let's support Brahmins. So therefore the money's not being allocated. Money's there. Individuals have money. Projects have money. Brahmins are not that expensive. But first of all, the priority has to be set. You know, the demand has to be recognized. But we need, you know, as we said, we need to invest in this. Well, theoretically, all three higher classes become brahmacharis. The businessmen and the administrators also get their brahmachari training. Yes. They can all go to the same gurukul, but they'll get different training there. Brahmins will stay in school longer than the kshatriyas. The kshatriyas will stay in school longer than the vaishyas.
In fact,
Yes. I'm going to have to run to give that is the place of initiation.
Well, our Harinam and Upanayanam, two initiations, Prabhupada is pretty strict. You take the initiation when you're ready to take and maintain the vows. So someone who can chant 16 rounds and follow the four regular principles, there's a good risk that he could do that. That only that person should be given initiation. That's our standard. That should have been our standard all along. We shouldn't be giving out initiation wholesale to those who are bad risks, who are likely not to follow the principles, or who have never been told what the principles are. I think that has to continue, because that's Prabhupada's policy on Vaishnava initiation. I don't think we're free to play around with that too much, to change, to institute new kinds of initiation or change it, Just like in the Gaudiya Math, as far as I understand, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati conceived of first and second initiation a little bit different than Prabhupada. First initiation was not really a full initiation. I know in the current Gaudiya Math it's like this, but I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also didn't give a new name to first initiates. And it was given out more freely to even those who were not really fully committed. And the committed disciples were recognized as actual disciples, given a name in the second initiation. And that was considered less serious vow. But Prabhupada made the first initiation just as important. You're a full-fledged disciple from first initiation. But that was Prabhupada's program. I don't think we can change back, to the more traditional system. I don't think we can modify it too much without deviating from Prabhupada's way of doing it.
So when we have a national college in every temple, we have a course, and the training chef is now we're admitting that they're not now for us initiation, but we already know the minimal initiation is the second feature requires that we demonstrate the very time. One demonstrates the ability to take the medical standard. So now we're admitting that there's people that aren't
but he's following his Kshatriya regulations.
But how is he going to say, it seems that his quota, his rights, his privilege is also to get initiation of the Kshatriya. So he can sit with the other Kshatriya.
Yes.
If he wants them to be
yes.
So how do we deal with this?
And of course he should also be chanting Hare Krishna, encouraged to. That's even more important than getting the sacred thread, spiritually. Although you don't need formal initiation to chant Hare Krishna, still we have the Harinam Diksha. So why shouldn't the Kshatriya get both initiations? But then how? If he's not going to, if he's going to be eating meat and drinking wine and, and having sex with various women, I don't know. Yes. Okay. Yeah, then, if Brahman gets 9 threads, the Kshatriya gets 6. Yes. He gets initiation, but it's a Kshatriya initiation. Yes. Yes, but... Yes, but how can we give initiation to someone who doesn't follow the four regular principles that Prabhupada specified. No eating meat. Yes? But what do you do with those who are going to continue eating meat? Yes? I don't know. It's natural for any person who's entered the material world and is becoming conditioned by material energy, basic attitude toward life is that this world is meant for our exploitation, the material energy, matter, and other people, our attitude toward them is there to be used for our own enjoyment, for our own advancement, aggrandizement. This is the exploitative basic material mentality. Value of the social system that's established by the Vedic literature is that this Varnashram system brings that exploitative tendency under control, so that people, despite their materialistic, despite their material desires, they can avoid becoming degraded into a lower status of life. Human beings can remain human beings and not become animals. And they can also actually make progress. There are different steps on the ladder. In the ashram system, the sannyasi is the top ladder. In the varna counterpart of the system, the Brahman is the top ladder, the top of the ladder. The best class of human being is the Brahman, because he's more than the others, free from this exploitative tendency. But the system is so designed that all the participants are equally getting benefit and making advancement. A Shudra may have a very materialistic mentality, but he's kept under control. The virtue of a Shudra is that he accepts authority. He works under authority. He's not independent. If a devotee thinks, I can't make it as a Brahmin, I've decided I'm going to be a Shudra. But you can't be a Shudra if you're independent. You're not even qualified as a Shudra if you want to remain act independently. So even the Shudra, even to be a Shudra in the Vedic system is a glorious position. A Shudra is somebody who's making advancement toward perfection. We shouldn't think that we're Vaishnavs, and for us to get involved with these material designations is a step down. We may be Vaishnavs by virtue of the mercy that's been given to us for being engaged in pure devotional service, but still, in many cases, everybody's an individual, but in many cases we haven't completely given up our material conditioning yet. And many of us come from a background where our material conditioning is pretty bad. So it's not really for us to become proper Brahmins, or even Kshatriyas, or even Vaishyas. It's not a step down. It's actually, it's for us, practically, it's a step up. Anyway, by you. Yes.
They should come into the management system on the level of the shuka.
You mean average, common people, ordinary people?
Yeah, shuka was on the level of the
shuka. Oh, I see. People who are outside the system, outcasts. Yes?
But that's stuck out to me because I thought, you know, I'd rather want
to make problems. Yes. Well, you know, Prabhupada wanted first province. It's not that Prabhupada didn't have a broader vision to engage people, even people who can't function as Brahmins. That means they can't follow the regular principles. He wanted to engage them also. So, you know, even early on, he developed a life membership program, which is not just for collecting money. Yeah. Prabhupada's concept of life membership was not just a means of getting a lot of money so he could build some big temples. Yeah, he didn't want to just use the Indians to exploit them for their money. It was a way to participate in devotional service. Prabhupada made comments like that, he considered many of our, life members in Bombay advanced devotees because they're doing so much service. Even other meat eaters. Still, because they were contributing so much, Prabhupada, I consider them Vaishnavas. So Prabhupada had a vision, even from the beginning. He didn't reveal this whole plan for Varnashram until, in the later years, start talking about it. But the idea is, first we train, we try to train up perfect Vaishnavas. And that's beyond even the concept of a Brahman, transcendental, superworldly persons. But that's not so easy. Not everybody becomes a Paramahamsa overnight, we see in practice. So the second thing is, at least we try to become Vaishnava Brahman, functioning as gentlemen. They are very civilized men and women. But that also runs into practical difficulties. Many devotees can't live up to that standard. And there are many other people who can't even begin the process, can't actually enter ISKCON because they can't, take the vows and follow them. So we have a few thousand devotees. Millions of people would be interested if we made it possible to participate in their own way. That's the concept of Varnashram, is to open it up to a lot more people. To do that, even the devotees who are able to follow sadhana bhakti without falling down, they also should accept these material designations externally. We've already accepted the designations of ashram. You're dressed in white, Prabhu next to you is dressed in saffron. These are material designations. But, it's part of our spiritual life. We don't think twice about it because Prabhupada taught it to us from the beginning. He taught a lot about the Varna system too, but to us it's theoretical, it's old history. You know, ancient times they used to be like this. But one reason why Prabhupada talked about it so much, how the Vedic social system was organized, because he ultimately wanted us to take it up also. Devotional service begins with dovetailing. Just chant Hare Krishna, be whatever you are, and the holy name and Krishna Prasadam and the association of devotees will purify you. But ultimately, devotional service is not meant just for dovetailing. We're supposed to be transformed into spiritual people. Part of that, according to my understanding, if anybody wants to debate it, we can, is to give up our material designations, our material conditioning. A lot of the problems we have in our personal lives and the society has in its collective life has to do with us being too much attached to our old material identities. Americans have their problems. Americans and Europeans tend to be materialistic. They fall, they slide back into sense gratification. You know, we like to live lifestyles that are beyond the dreams of most of the people in the world. You know, 300 million people in the world are usurping the vast majority of the Earth's resources. Most of the 5-6 billion people in the world can't live anywhere up to the standard we live, the opulence, extravagance that we live. Every time you flush the toilet, there's how many gallons of water? 50? Every time you take a shower, 100 gallons of water. A person living in a village here in India, it takes a bucket of water, 5 gallons. In my town, they take a cup of water out of the fields. That's too much. It's too meager. But you can take a decent shower with 5 gallons of water. Why squander 100? And these little things in our lives, we take for granted, but we live very extravagantly. And therefore, we Europeans and Americans, we have a tendency to slide back into a life of sense gratification. But, the Slavic devotees and the Indian devotees, they all have their own version of, own kinds of maya that they, or conditioning. That they're not, so eager to give up. Like Indians have a tendency to think that that they're because they're Indian, they're automatically very spiritually advanced, and the Westerners are all barbarians, and will never in this lifetime come to the standard. So this kind of prejudice is there. Each, no matter what our individual conditionings are, our collective national conditionings. They're holding us back from coming to the standard of Vedic civilization. All of us, we're barbarians, because this Kali Yuga is a barbarian age. Even the persons who can claim birth and Brahmin families in India, they're also very corrupt, most of them. So all this corruption is so rampant, we have to give that up. And learn how to behave like actual civilized persons. That is the standard of Vedic civilization. The Vedic civilization, the exploitive tendency is kept under control. It's minimized. And for the higher classes, one is expected to become very unselfish. Dedicate his life. Brahmins and Kshatriyas have to dedicate their lives to the service of society and the service of God. That is opposite to the whole concept of Western civilization. We have, democracy nowadays, which means everyone has an equal opportunity to try to exploit the resources. It's an open race for everybody. And may the best man win. So it's so-called equality, just like we give the women their liberation, or they take their liberation. But it's liberation to be exploited, to be abused. Yeah. So the women are not protected by their parents. The parents don't arrange marriages for them. They arrange their own marriages. It means they have to become prostitutes, sell their bodies to find a husband. That's freedom. That's equality. And the reality in the modern world is that a few people are winning the race, and everybody else, and most people, are simply working hard like cats and dogs, struggling to survive. And the person, the ones with the best cats and dogs, they get the majority of the resources. Vedic civilization is designed to work in the opposite direction, to minimize the involvement in sense gratification, and minimize the unnecessary squandering of Krishna's energy. So especially the Brahmins are meant to live a simple life, to avoid materialistic, unnecessary extravagance and opulence. That's part of the Brahminical lifestyle, is to be very simple. Even if most people can't do this, even if 95% of the Persons who are in the modern world can't simply give up their lifestyles. If a small percentage, lives a more ideal lifestyle, this will set an example for everybody else. And those who live a very simple life and are pure and are true to their vows, and therefore when they open their mouths, what they say is trusted, those few people can lead everybody else. It's not that everybody has to become pure. But if some few become, then that can transform the society. If we get even one Paramahamsa can change the world. If we get perfect pure devotees, even one or two or three, they can very easily change the whole world. If that can't be done, the next best thing is to train up a class of Brahmins. And Prabhupada talked about that. You know, he wants to make a class of Brahmins. These are the leaders of human society, progressive society. Okay, so we were discussing yesterday how to do that. We stopped in the middle. I don't know if anybody wants to pick up what they were saying. continue what they were saying yesterday.
Yes, ma'am? I just have one question.
Yes.
Don't you think if you chose Shirobhupada's transcendence on Yukta Vairagya?
Yukta Vairagya?
Yes. If like everything in the service of the Lord, don't you think it's one of the factors that Swami Yogi from Kota in this Yukta Vairagya, the man of engaging everything in the Lord's service?
Yes.
They become Kota, but they don't have the adhikar, the ability to live in that standard.
Yes, many devotees, for some years, they're doing very nicely, using everything for Krishna, and doing nice preaching. But then sometimes they just fall back into their old materialism, and spend the last 40 years of their life just making money for their families, which is not that a householder shouldn't make money for his family, but why? Why give up our involvement in preaching? Why give up chanting 16 rounds a day and then making money?
Good intention.
Yes. But for vidyadesha bhutana, it's natural. Human beings, conditioned souls, have a great tendency toward materialism. What is needed is a few people who don't succumb. We remain simple, honest, don't go back to materialism. They'll help guide the others. Not everybody, very few human beings can be completely self-motivated. They have to be directed by others. So the vast majority of the population, the Vaishyas and the Shudras, to be frank, they have to be told what to do by the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. So this Vedic social system, it's not egalitarian. And the modern world can't tolerate that everyone isn't equal. But actually the Vedic system is aristocracy, that there's, recognized that the higher classes who are a minority are superior, and their authority should be respected by the others. So with our modern worldview, it's very hard to grasp that, to accept that. But, that's the actual basis of the Vedic system. Some people are more spiritually advanced than others, more qualified to speak and be listened to. So nowadays we have this comm system, internet, and anybody can have a say. Everyone's an equal authority, but that's not the Vedic system. The Vedic system is the person who knows best speaks and the others listen. Everybody just giving their own opinion is not of much value. Okay, but here we're dealing with Brahmins, so I'm opening up for discussion. And, respected God brothers and God sisters, please give some ideas, because I'm a newcomer to this topic. I don't have much insight. Yeah.
Well, I thought that one of the poems in the discourse is that the thoughts are either they are overly based in certain sorts.
Yes.
That they have high responsibility, not the person who gets the mercy. And then
the Brahmins diagnose, and to the best of their judgment, they help decide what's appropriate occupation. And the Kshatriyas oversee to see that once the occupation is assigned, that everybody follows his own duty. The Kshatriya is the watchdog. See that, you know, that everybody acts according to his own rules and regulations.
Just because in this third point, he makes a strong point that the spiritual laws and ignores the nation.
Which verse is it?
Seven,
yeah.
That ignores the nation's spiritual merit, lots of things he can perform in his emotions.
Yes. Yes. It's not that we don't have devotees who are competent to give such guidance, but we overload them with managerial responsibilities. The guru should be allowed to function as a Brahman. He has enough to do. He has to guide his disciples and instruct everybody. The sannyasi, the guru, the Brahman. Let others do the management. It should be organized like that. The functions should be separated. So our problem now is that practically nobody is free to just be a Brahman. Not that we don't have those who can be Brahmins, but they're not allowed to be Brahmins, or the system doesn't allow them to be Brahmins. Yes?
You know, sometimes in order to be Brahmins, they just quit the
GBC. Quit the GBC. Some do that. Yes.
Because they're not even given the
okay. But I think also Brahmins have to organize. Brahminical voice has to be there to be heard. But unless you have one person who's so potent that everyone will listen to him, then a collective voice of Brahmins is the next practical solution. That means organization, not necessarily by the GBC. It can be done locally, small communities, Brahminical groups in different places locally should organize themselves, should form discussion groups. And if what they have to say is intelligent enough, devotees will listen. Yes. That's what Prabhupada wanted the GBC to be, to be a Brahminical. Yes. But what happens is that the GBC is dealing with emergency management, cleaning up disasters. And so they can't function as Brahmins. They're too busy trying to clean up, the messes from disasters. It's not even effective management. It's reactive management.
There's been a serious lack of training in some of the secondary levels.
Yes. No training.
And even the initiating group, a lot of them have been trained. So I don't like them to be so much specific. I mean, I'm not criticizing.
Yes. Yes. Well, one who's functioning, not that this is not a critique on what's going on, but this is the way it should be. A guru should be free to give his attention to disciples. He should be able to dedicate his attention and time to them. It's a full-time job. It's a Brahminical job to be a guru. And if you're busy managing too much, then how can you find the time? And maybe there should be more gurus so that you don't have to take so many disciples that you can't handle them. Guru should see that his disciples train up, if not by himself personally, at least arrange that somebody trains them up. Basic principles in Krishna consciousness.
Please, yeah. I find it helpful to think of this word as pioneers.
Yes.
In the sense that pioneers go through an incredible form amount of austerity in one sense.
Yes. Great verses. So when we look at one thing you can see from that is those earlier leaders of our movement who fell down. You know, in one sense they're glorious because they sacrificed their own spiritual life for Prabhupada's mission. They took risks more than they could actually sustain, and then they fell down. But that's self-sacrifice. You know, they're the pioneers. They built this movement, you know, so we shouldn't just push them aside. You know, they're the failures. Is that okay? Yeah.
I also found that actually in this Korobu, which is to the temple presence to follow up, actually everything is laid out there. Did you see laid everything down? How the temple should be organized, his own descriptions of the different devotees.
The job has been defined theoretically, but you got to be given the. You got to be freed from having to do other things and be a temple president.
And
my experience being on Brahminical boards in various temples, it usually doesn't work also. The temple authority has some devotee they can't handle and they call on the Brahmins to browbeat them, someone into submission. That shouldn't be the purpose of a Brahminical council. Just to do the dirty work, for the management that they can't do themselves. As far as I know, I've been told that a combination of those two things is being discussed right now. Setting up a Brahminical advisory body that works directly with the GBC, and then below the GBC is a managerial council. And the GBC tries to get out of the business of directly managing as much as possible. It delegates all the problems that they normally deal with now to a lower body of managers. Global managers. Anyway, that's they're talking about in theory. Okay. I think we brought up over and over again that what's needed is training, education. What kind of education? Any idea what can be done? One thing is when you're defining educational programs, the first thing, what they tell you in textbooks on designing curriculum, first thing you have to define is what's the result you're trying to get. You take children or adults and you design an educational system for them. it makes no sense. You can design courses and, you know, do so many things. But first of all, you have to define what kind of people are you trying to produce? What kind of change are you trying to impose on people? You put people in a black box. What are they supposed to be when they come out the other end of the box? So that has to be discussed. If we're going to discuss, you know, how to organize education, we have to say, what are we trying to educate for? Yeah.
Trying to bring everybody to
the
understanding.
Not everybody. Bring some, yeah.
Actually, it's going to be something. You've got to really break it into two sections.
Okay.
Where you have your normal society,
yeah.
And you also have the body of employees and a couple of employees. Because all they initiate the voting group, they can't come from an understanding that you don't initiate.
Okay. Okay, somebody who can't follow regular principles shouldn't live in the temple. Somebody who can't follow the principles shouldn't take initiation. Okay.
As a matter of fact, you're a rebel. That's what they were actually out. Because when they took their vows, they promised their spiritual master to do these things.
Yes.
So now they're not only falling back into the material, they also lie, and they're causing great discomfort and problems to their spiritual master.
Yes. But, you know, we have the case, many devotees who are sincere intend to follow their vows. After some years, they run into problems. You know, someone may be a good brahmachari, finally decides, I have to get married, and he gets married and falls into maya. Happens. With sincere devotees.
But he should be living.
Okay, then he was outside. Yes. And then he's lapsing on his vows. You know,